Welcome to the Space Show, Martin.
Thanks, Andrew. Great to be with you.
Could you tell me something about the Launceston Planetarium, please?
Indeed, the planetarium has actually been in Launceston since 1967, and that's in the Queen Victoria Museum here. And a couple of years later, a special purpose-built section of the museum was built to house the planetarium, to build a new dome, and to have a proper planetarium theatre. And that's where it's been ever since. And we have around about 8,000 or 10,000 visitors a year through the planetarium, which, for a place the size of Launceston, we feel is quite significant. Being part of a museum, it also means we get a lot of passing trade. People who are in the museum will come in and see a planetarium show, as well as the people who come along specifically to see it. Of our annual attendance figures, roughly 50% come in booked school groups, and they can be anything from prep classes, where the kids are about 5 years old, you know, right up to maybe years 11 and 12. Sometimes also educational groups from tertiary institutions will come to our planetarium as well, from the university, from celestial navigation classes, from the Maritime College nearby, for example. So it has quite a wide use, among the public and the schools, education groups and so on. Now, we have a Zeiss planetarium projector. Zeiss, in fact, are the company that made the very first projection planetariums, going back to the 1920s. And a lot of those, a great number of them, are in use around the world today. Our projector's in an 8-metre dome, and we have 45 seats in a circular arrangement. So people sit around these seats and look up into the night sky, or what appears to be the night sky, and enjoy the view. Our programs are varied. They are usually about some specific topic. For example, we have a program all about comets. We have a program all about the solar system. Currently, we're running a program all about the constellations, because people are fascinated with the folklore of the constellations and why we have, or why we say that there are animals and creatures and patterns in the sky and so on. So, a great deal of interest in the planetarium here, and also I feel that interest is increasing as well, because people are realising that, hey, looking up to the night sky is something we can do free from our backyards every night. Let's go to the planetarium and learn something about it.
Did you find, for example, special events such as the opposition to Mars last year brings in extra crowds?
They do indeed. In addition to the planetarium shows themselves, where there's something to actually see in the real night sky of great significance, we also run observing evenings with telescopes at the back of the planetarium. And certainly those special events do increase the interest in astronomy and the planetarium in general. Certainly that famous opposition of Mars that we had drew a lot of people. There were and a lot of questions too, people ringing in asking what it was all about and so on. And these kind of events are really good for people in the planetarium industry, because they're times where people are focused on the subject of astronomy or space exploration.
I couldn't help but notice the spectacular sky you have here. I would have thought, I've always associated Tasmania with a fair amount of cloud. How do you get on with that?
Well, we do have our share of cloudy nights, of course. But I think one of the significant things about Tasmania is that we don't really have any very large cities. Now, of course, if you go into any large city anywhere in the world, you're going to get what we call light pollution. And I'm sure everybody is aware that when you're in a large city, you can't see the stars so clearly. Certainly, you can't see the Milky Way properly. In Australia, if you're in big cities like Melbourne or Sydney, you have a real problem if you want a good view of the sky. In Tasmania, our largest city, of course, Hobart, still has, I think, less than 200,000 people. And the whole population of Tasmania is significantly less than Melbourne or Sydney. We have less than 500,000 people on the whole island. So here in Tasmania, there's less of a problem with light pollution. And although certainly from the centres of the relatively large cities of Hobart and Launceston, you don't get such a good view of the sky, you don't have far to drive to get out into the country and get that really dark sky and that spectacular view of the Milky Way.
Do you have any trouble with businesses and so on who want to shine lights on buildings and so on at night, such as we have, say, in Melbourne, where it's almost impossible to see more than half a dozen stars? Are there any legal cases and things like that, or do you work with councils and so on to keep down light pollution deliberately, or don't you have to worry about it here in Tasmania?
Certainly from time to time we will make comments to some local councils about the state of affairs with light pollution, if a building is being floodlit, or if somebody has set up those awful globe lights, the ones that sort of send more than half their light up into the night sky, we will make some comments about it. I'm unaware of any actual legal cases that the planetarium's been involved with that specifically are aimed at reducing light pollution. We simply advise, we answer questions about light pollution and so on. But in terms of legal cases, it's actually quite an interesting topic. Planetarium people, not only here in Tasmania but in the rest of the country but around the world, do often get involved in legal cases, and these can vary from minor road accidents where the question is, was the sun below the horizon and should the driver have had his lights on, to unfortunately far more serious things where somebody's been killed as a result of an accident, or in some cases even murders, which involve, for example, witnesses who claim they recognised a face, and astronomers are often asked to come in to comment on the amount of natural light that was falling on the scene, or the amount of moonlight, and to whether a face could have been recognised under those particular lighting conditions. So yes, lighting does come into it a lot. Lighting comes into a lot of legal cases, and where there is a question of the natural light from the night sky, the twilight, the moon, the sun, and so on, yes, we do get quite involved with those things.
How do you work out where the sun was at a particular time? Do you use tables, or do you use the desktop planetaria programs that are now popular?
Actually, here I use software that I've written myself, which is specifically designed to get very, very accurate results as to the locations of the sun and the moon, and the amount of twilight falling onto a scene. But there are a lot of other aspects that we have to take into account here. For example, as every person knows, especially every regular stargazer knows, you don't just go out and look at the sky after being blinded by looking at the TV or the lights inside your house. You have to let your eyes get used to the dark, and a lot of people involved in legal cases sometimes can be unaware of the fact that somebody who's been standing outside for 10 or 15 minutes will see far more clearly than somebody who's just rushed out to look at a scene. Which direction was the light falling onto the particular scene? Which direction was the twilight in comparison with the way somebody's face was pointing? A lot of those questions that need to be asked that come into it.
Do you get involved in town planning issues? For example, I remember being asked to advise on where the shadow would be from an adjacent building that was being proposed, and the next door neighbour was a bit upset and thought they'd lose their son. Do you get involved in things like that?
Yes, we do. In fact, more often than not, we get questions from people who have a neighbour who is building something next door to them. They're really worried about whether the shadow will fall across their own property. Or maybe they're building their house, they want to know an exact north-south line or the direction to the sun because they're putting solar panels on their roofs. So not only do we get involved in issues where a building is being constructed and where there might be a legal case where a shadow is falling, but we get involved with people who are actually building their own houses and want to know a bit more about which way their houses should face as well. We get a very, very broad range, actually, of inquiries at the planetarium. Some of the more interesting ones are where people want to get married and they want to know when the full moon is. So they want to, they want to plan their wedding night. And there are all sorts of other reasons why people want to know how much light is falling onto a scene. We get calls from people who want to plant their seeds at the right phase of the moon. Now, of course, there isn't necessarily any connection with the two topics, but some people feel that there is, and we're happy to provide them with the information that they want. So, we do get a big variety of questions.
You must get some of the, crank calls, shall we say, or a little bit weird. What are some of the weird stories you could tell?
I had a call one day from a lady whose boyfriend told her that he was from Alpha Centauri. And she was very, very concerned about this. And I felt that I was probably not the best person to speak to about this, because I felt that perhaps she needed help from some other area. This is many, many years ago. But she seemed to be convinced that he was telling the truth, and I had to gently tell her that it was very unlikely that he was from Alpha Centauri, to put it mildly. But yes, we do get a lot of calls too from people who've seen something in the sky. The UFO calls, of course, the objects that were chasing somebody down the street or something like that, the two lights in the sky, sometimes which were simply a conjunction between Venus and Jupiter, because, of course, when you're travelling in a car, these things seem to be following you because of the angle that you're looking at them. So, yes, we do get a lot of those calls. But we get a lot of very sensible ones too, and it's really good to have people call who have said, look, I saw a bright light in the sky last night. Was it a planet? Can you tell me more about it? I love to help people that way, because that way people will learn something, then they'll go out the next night and have another look at that planet. They might get their binoculars out. I had some lovely conversations with a gentleman here in Tasmania who was very interested at a fairly advanced age in learning about the motions of the planets and the elliptical orbits and how you calculate sunrise and sunset. And so I was helping him with a bit of the maths, and that gave me a lot of pleasure too. So, some of the inquiries we get can be really rewarding to answer.
Someone who comes to the museum here in Launceston and comes in and takes the planetarium show, what can they expect to see?
Well, basically, our shows run for about 35 to 40 minutes. It comes in two basic parts. There's a recorded show, which might be about some topic we've been mentioning, like comets or the constellations. And then there's a 5 or 10 minute segment in which the astronomer describes the sights of the current night sky. So, for example, at the moment, of course, we have Venus over in the west after sunset. We've got the Milky Way over in the east, this time of the year. We'll describe where people can see those things, where the Southern Cross is, because everybody likes to know where the Southern Cross is, and also any major point of interest that's in the night sky that people should be watching for at the moment. Perhaps the space station's going over on a particular evening, so we'll describe the track of the space station across the sky. So no matter what the topic of the recorded show has been about, there's a discussion about what people can see tonight. And I feel that if people leave the planetarium knowing just two or three things that they should watch for tonight, and the fact that they should get their binoculars out and maybe drive out of town a bit to see the Milky Way more clearly, then I might have started people off on an interest in the night sky, especially young people. You know, a lot of people who get involved in science start off by looking at the night sky and appreciating the fascination of the night sky, just going out in their own backyards and knowing about a few things they're watching. Now, they may not get involved in professional astronomy in their lifetimes, but it starts them with an interest in science. They might become eminent geologists or chemists and so on. So it's a good start for people. So that's what I like to do. Recently, we've been showing pictures of Mars up on the dome as well, the latest pictures that have come through from the NASA Mars rover. So that's been very popular as well.
And where can they find the museum?
The planetarium is located within the Royal Park site, as we call it now, of the Queen Victoria Museum. Our museum is on two sites. It's at the Royal Park site, and it's in Wellington Street, Launceston, right up at the northern end of Wellington Street. And the planetarium has public shows at 3 o'clock Tuesday to Friday and 2 and 3 on Saturday afternoons. But during the government school holidays, we have shows at 2 and 3 o'clock right through from Monday to Saturday. So, yeah, it's always good for when people come along and take a look.
Thank you for joining us on The Space Show, Martin.
Nice to speak with you, Andrew.